I mean, we're playing the Friday Open because it's kind of like a Friday, right? It's a last day before. I'm assuming most people listening here are having, you know, a few days off. July 4th, 4th of July, Independence Weekend coming up here around the nation. Western New York, Buffalo. Hey, there's Danny Gare behind me. Danny, what's up? How are you? There he is, Danny Gare, number 18. I am down at Lecom Harbor Center here for the Sabres Development Camp. Sal Capaccio with you. What's going on, Danny? Maybe Danny will join me for a minute. I'm live. I'll do this right away. Hold on, Paul. I'm going to get to Paul Hamilton. He can wait for number 18, Danny Gare. What's going on, brother? How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing great. Good to see you. I know you're here. Sometimes you're down in Florida. You come up for this a lot or what?
Well, I came back about a month ago. I spend time in the summers here with my family and usually pop down. Last year I was here because I like to, you know, say hi to the boys and see what's going on and just check up. And it's great to see the crowd here and a little cooler in here too. So
it is for sure. When you came to the Buffalo Sabres,
yeah.
What was it like for you to your entry point into the team, into the league? Like here they have these development camps. These guys come in. What was it like for you back then?
Well, we used to have our training camp in St. Catharines, Ontario, and we was 100 guys, you know, rookies, whoever wasn't making the team that at that time, any team, tryout players, so forth, so on. But then after, you know, I think it was 2 or 3 weeks of camp, they broke camp with 30 guys, and we came to Buffalo. And my first roommate when I came to Buffalo was Peter McNabb. And we stayed at the old Statler, and he had a dog. It was interesting. His dog was with him. He named it Sunshine. It was the name of the dog, and it was a big collie. But we had little room, and his dog kept jumping up and down. And I said, Maxie, can we just, you know, get this dog out of here for a bit? But, no, it was great. And I ended up making the team, and we had a great year that year, went on to the finals. And it was just a good experience, but a lot different than it is now.
No doubt. And one of the things that's different, I mean, you guys had some success right away with those teams. Obviously, this team, 14 years out of the playoffs. How close do you think they are, Danny?
Better. I mean, better. I know that it was frustrating. I thought last year, and I sent Lindy a text when they won the 3 games out west. I think it was, I don't know, late October maybe. And then they went on that 13-game drought after that. And that was the downside, obviously, of the whole season. But I think, you know, what they're trying to do here is continue to build. It's all you can do. I mean, it's a team that I think has got some skill up front, obviously, and their back end, I think you know, is suspect at times, but I think with Power, you know, if he can play better down the road, and Darlene's, you know, he's an all-star. But with this Kessel Ring, the kid they got from, you know, Utah, I watched him play in the World Championships. I thought he was really good. I really did. And we'll see what happens in the net. So, yeah.
Hey, listen, I didn't mean to put you on the
no
spot.
Problem.
Thanks for walking over.
No problem, sir.
Great to see you. To all right, you got Max down there. You see Max, he's getting big. Max, say hi to Danny Gare right there.
Max is getting big.
I love bringing my son every to this. Yeah. This is cool for them to see the skill up here. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it is. I mean, these kids, 3-on-3 is always so much fun. I remember playing when we had practices. It was so much fun. You know, wide open ice, lots of room, and it really shows off your skill and speed and quickness. So, yeah, it's great to see, and it's like I say, it's got a nice, nice crowd to watch.
Yeah, for sure.
So yeah, good.
Hey, tickets, Danny Gare. Be well, buddy. Right, great to see you as always. Yeah, have a great summer, Danny Gare. How about that? Like just walking right by me here as I'm at the Lecom Harbor Center. You never know who you're going to run into here at Sabres Development Camp, Prospect Camp here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Glad to be with you, Sal Capaccio. It is a bit chilly, and I said yesterday I was thinking about it. Every year I love to bring my son down here for the 3-on-3. Challenge the scrimmage, and you got a good crowd here today. A lot of kids in attendance. It's really cool to see. This is a fantastic place to watch hockey. It really is. And now I'm a hockey dad. What a move right there. I'm watching this game as it's going on in front of me. I mean, now that I'm a hockey dad and my son's been playing hockey, you just know how passionate people are about, you know, hockey in Western New York at the younger ages. You love to see it, even though this team has not had the success that we'd love to see for some of these youngsters. It's great to see them out here and watching these young Buffalo Sabres. In the meantime, Paul Hamilton is literally probably 25 yards from me, and he's going to be, but he's not sitting next to me, but he's still going to talk to me here because he's down there. That's the beauty of technology. So Paul Hamilton joins me right now on the Wester Hotline here inside the same building as me. Hi, Paul. How are you?
I'm extremely upset. How could you preempt me for a guy who has his jersey in the rafters?
I know.
I mean, you would rather talk to a guy with his jersey in the rafters who has scored 50 goals in the National Hockey League?
I tell you, and I joke with Danny. I have a good enough relationship where I can joke with him and he laughs. I say, Danny, I mean, let's be honest. I mean, they retired your number, but not until after Paul Sear wore it. Okay, let's be honest with you.
And or obviously, Kevin O'Shea, if you want to go back to year one.
Okay.
Hey, the kid from Clarence Center just scored. McCarthy.
Oh yeah, that's right. Paul, why are there the guys we're talking in the morning show? Why is this a little bit scaled down as far as roster and number of players in this camp? Oh, another nice goal right there.
Zimmer
that was scored
shot.
By
Zimmer.
That's Brody Zimmer.
He has a bazooka for a shot. Played at Minnesota this year, third round pick, and just has an unbelievable shot. He ripped one off the crossbar earlier before you came on the air and. But that's his weapon, and he's one of the guys that was played at University of Minnesota as a true freshman. That doesn't happen that much anymore. When I was in college, yes, mm-hmm. it happened a lot, but it rarely happens. I think all the years I covered Niagara hockey doing games, I saw one true freshman. Usually they play in the USHL in junior before they come to. So that means, too, he's playing against guys who are 4 or 5 years older than him. You know, a true freshman at Minnesota, but that's his weapon. He and the thing we were talking about yesterday, we were talking to him, he, Kleber, who was a second-round pick, that big right-handed shot defenseman, and Schultz all played peewee together. They're all on the same team.
You know what you also don't see? A lot of guys, if they're good enough to go to the league, they're not there all 4 years in college, like Ryan Johnson, right? You know what I mean? You're right about the freshmen, but a lot of these guys, they're good enough. They don't stay all 4 years. That yep. happened. I think Devin Levi was all 4 years, right? I think that's how he
no.
was. He
three.
No, did he say three? Okay, three. Even though he had all the accolades, obviously. But there you go. That's a great example as well. I want to talk about what Kevin Adams said yesterday. We had you on before the scrum, and then you heard the scrum. And, of course, Paul has an article at WGR550.com. But before I do that, let me ask you one more time. Do you because I don't want to lose my train of thought. What is the reason did they give for not having as many players here in this particular prospect camp as normal?
That started. Mertka just lost the puck on a breakaway. This year's number one pick, big mm-hmm. kid. He
skates well for a big guy. By the way,
yeah, he does. I saw him lead a. I haven't forgotten your question. I saw him lead a 3-on-2, and it didn't work out. And he got back in a hurry and was able to get back and break up a play, which impressed me. Now back, it started. Remember when the Amherst made the conference final a couple of years ago? And it's like mm-hmm. we don't want to make these kids come to this camp. When they basically just finished up less than a month ago. So it kind of started with that. Most of the Amherst, if not all, who are prospects have been to this camp before. Kampf is the only one here, and he was the guy they signed out of college right near the end of the year last year. So he's never been to one of these, and that's why he's here. So they have fewer guys that come to it. Like this 3-on-3 has always been three teams. And they've easily been able to ice three
yes.
teams where one
I
team would be
so.
Watching and it'd be a round robin. Now, this had 30 minutes on. It's running time. I'm guessing we're going to play 2 30-minute halves, with two
yes,
teams
here.
Yes,
I was told that because when I set up here and said, hey, what's the timing here? And I was told 2 30-minute halves. We'll have a bit of an intermission in between. They might want to clean the ice. I'm not really
they
sure
probably
how much
will,
they're going to do
yes.
that. And then, but you're right, Paul. What I remember is blue, gold, and white they had for the mm-hmm. team jerseys. And they would go have a few different games.
Yeah, no, they'd have a round robin, then a semifinal and a final. They would do. So one team would get a bye, the other two teams would play in the semifinal, and then they would play the final. So, they have scaled it down, but a lot of it is they feel also that it's more important for guys to get, get their rest, get home, get into their summer routines. A lot of them are in routines, whether it's with skating coaches or goaltending coaches, those types of things, strength and conditioning. They don't want them to miss that kind of stuff, especially if their seasons or they play in the Memorial Cup late. That's also come into play a couple of times. They would rather they get their off season. They believe in, yes, get some rest to start with. Maybe take a vacation and get yourself into your summer training program. They think that's more beneficial for them.
Paul Hamilton in the Westshore Hotline, but Not far from me here at Lecom Harbor Center. We are down here for Sabres Prospect Camp. It's the scrimmage to end the week of camp. Kevin Adams spoke with the media yesterday. Paul, you were part of that scrum. We knew that Bo Byram's situation would be top of mind and really the first question asked. He didn't give anything. He did give one thing definitive. He didn't obviously give an update on anything as far as any trade progress or anything like that, but he did specifically say they will match any offer given to Bo Byram. What did you think about his definitive answer to that?
Yeah, and there was no gray area. We are matching if it happens. I mean, so there was no gray area, no conspiracy theory, no. I mean, it was. This is what we are doing should it happen. This is why we did certain things with our salary cap, so they can't do. Remember, Kokakamemi went from Montreal to Carolina. They did something with the first year of the contract that was like way, way overpaid. So they overpaid him for first year knowing that Montreal couldn't, and then they redid a contract afterwards because it was only a 1-year deal, as I recall, I think, as we're sitting here talking. And then the contract that he actually signed was more in line with but that's how they got him away from. So they wanted enough salary cap space that if somebody were to try to do that to the Sabres, they wouldn't be able to pull it off. The Sabres would have enough salary cap room that they could do that, they could match that. Because they don't want futures. They don't want a first, second, third round pick or a first and third. They want players. So, all right, if you match and there still needs to be a trade, at least there's certainty on what the other team is going to have to pay, what kind of contract they're talking, if a trade is still on the table. So there was no gray area at all. It was, we are definitely matching any offer sheet.
Okay, so the next question is, how much of that is a message to teams who might offer him, and how much of that is actually truth? I mean, look, I'm not saying he's lying, but, you know, he's trying to send a message. I guess I ask this because I'm still wondering if he's just trying to make sure and pressure a team into saying, look, if you really want him, you got to trade for him because we're going to match an offer sheet. And that kind of puts another team in a different position. Or do you really believe, hey, it does not matter what the offer sheet is? Because let's be honest, Paul, there is an offer sheet scenario out there that the Sabres may say there's just no way we think that that's valuable for Bo Byram.
Well, they have enough room that they could max his contract and they could match it. Mm-hmm. I think that's what they talk about when they have it. He would look like a fool if he's playing games here. He would look like an absolute fool. I mean, his credibility, whatever it is now, would be zero if an offer sheet came and they didn't match it because of the way he put it. He didn't leave a gray area. He didn't say we most likely. He said we will match any offer sheet, and that's why we set up our. So that's what I'm talking about is conspiracy theories. He would look like an absolute fool if he didn't match it.
Do you think there are teams, A, that are still in negotiations for a trade for Bo Byram, and B, teams that are seriously contemplating an offer sheet for Bo Byram?
Oh, yeah, there are talks. You know me, I'm not a big, huge believer in these offer sheet things when they come up because they so rarely happen. There were two last year, both by St. Louis, and the reason there were two is they went after Edmonton knowing that they couldn't match because of their salary cap. So it's just so rarely done. I know we have to talk. I wish it was done more. I wish teams would use it because I think it is a tool for teams to help them get better. But they just don't. So I don't get too tied up and worried about offer sheets. And I don't think teams needed Kevin Adams to tell them that he would match. I think it was widely assumed the Sabres would match any offer sheet, but he was asked the question, so he answered it. You know, and he answered it in a very definitive way.
Paul Hamilton of the Western Hotline, they are now cleaning the ice, as we suspected, in between the two 30-minute periods. So we have a little bit of time here. We'll have another 30-minute period. The score is now 5-2. The gold is beating the blue. Looking over some of the roster here. Only two goalies at this. There are five. Okay, so three for one team, two for another. And Retzlaff's been around a little while, Scott. Scott Retzlaff, Paul. He's been around a little while in the organization.
Yeah, Retzlaff was in net for the gold team. Surrendered, two shots on two goals on 23 shots, so he made 21 saves. You might remember last year, as he put it, it was the Buffalo Amherst playing in the preseason because the Buffalo Sabres were abroad spending preseason in Germany and then played the two games against the Devils in Czechia. So it had to be the Amherst playing the preseason games. And he went to Columbus and he said he looked on the internet in the morning and saw he was playing the Columbus Blue Jackets pretty much, except maybe for two or three players. He was playing the Blue Jackets team. So it's like, okay, kid, you're from the Western Hockey League in junior. Go to it. And that's what he said. He goes, I just sat there and said, you know what? I got nothing to lose. Just go play. And he played 40 minutes and shut him out, you know, and really played very, very well. Yeah. So, and plus he's been in Rochester for a couple of weeks after his season in Seattle ended. So he was able, as the Amherst were preparing for the playoffs, to practice with them, see what a pro team is about, see what Rochester's about, since that's likely where he'll be with Levi. And, you know, so that gives him a little bit of jump start. It's not going to all be new to him when he shows up there. So he had a, you know, in a three-on-three, you're going to get scored on a little bit. He got scored on right away by Jake Richard. But 21 saves, did a pretty good job. I don't know if you realize this, Sal, as you look at the rosters, there may be a name you recognize. Remember way back in the 90s, the Tampa Bay Lightning had a young lady in goal who played a preseason for them.
Menom Rayom.
That's her son, Dakota Rayom Mullen.
Really?
Playing for Team
that
Gold.
That is a great piece of trivia.
Yeah, that is his son out there, or her son out there.
I did not know that.
Makes me feel old. Marty was here yesterday actually texting with her, seeing if she was going to be here. She's not. But, yeah, that's her son out there.
I do remember that. That was, like, I think it was my freshman year of college at Syracuse. I remember that she was on the cover of a magazine, and she was a lot of talk, obviously a female professional goalie. She kind of paved the way a lot for, you know, what's happening now and the real incredible explosion of women's hockey, obviously, around the world, in particular here in the United States and even in Buffalo. So, yeah, very cool. That's a really good piece of trivia right there. Paul Hamilton on the Western Hotline. Paul, yesterday, I had a good discussion / debate with a bunch of people online about the Bo Byram situation. I think you and I are aligned here. They don't need prospects. They don't need, you know, a first-round pick. What has that gotten them over the years? But the pushback I got from people, and I want to run this by you, is, but Sal, their prospect pool isn't as good anymore as it was a few years ago. They don't have anybody in the pipeline. And guess what? It doesn't appear they're going to be really climbing up the standings. So why not just let Bo Byram go for, let's say, a first and a third, if that's what the offer sheet is? I disagree with that, but that is the pushback that I got and a good, I think, discussion about this.
Yeah, no, that's totally wrong. GMs are constantly calling about the Sabres prospects. Adams gets calls daily, some of the prospects that they have, especially Noah Ostlund, Hellenius, who really came on at the end of last year as a young 18-year-old. He played in the American Hockey League as an 18-year-old, and he had to learn North American hockey. And he really came on and was putting up some points near the end. Same thing with Noah Ostlund. He was great. And when Noah Ostlund came to Buffalo for that little bit, I thought he played very well. He couldn't buy a goal. He had some opportunities. But I liked his overall two-way play. I think the two Russian defensemen are both going to be guys who can be in the NHL. One of the reasons, you know, there was a lot of hand-wringing about Bernard Docker, and I think one of the reasons is I think Lindy Ruff is more into maybe having Ryan Johnson around. Ryan Johnson, talking to Mike Leone,
yes,
who was his coach a couple of days ago, said Ryan Johnson, along with Jack Rathbone, were the shutdown pair for them. And as I was watching them in the playoffs, I had an opportunity to see that. He really came forward last year and had a good year of development. So it seems to me that maybe he's ahead of Bernard Docker and Bryson and those guys. And right now, I don't have Byram in my lineup. I do have Johnson, you know, as the guy. Now, if Byram signs some type of a contract and is there for day one, then Samuelson is probably on the third pair with Timmins. But if Byram's there, then Samuelson's probably with Dahlin, and I think Johnson is then in the lineup for Buffalo. I think he would be the number six guy.
I was going to ask you about Johnson because I agree. It feels to me like this team thinks Ryan Johnson's going to be on this roster and a contributor this year.
And, you know, the two defensemen, second-round picks that we talk about, are also, you know, they're in college. So fans maybe who don't think the prospect pool is there anymore don't get a chance to see Adam Kleber, who is huge. I was watching him out here today a little bit, following him. I love the fact that the Sabres this year, you know, drafted or had a nifty Russian here that they have. A nifty player, I'll just put it that way, here in Zelenov. I was searching for his name. And, of course, you know, Kleber's this big man and everything. He had no problem with him whatsoever one-on-one. Easily rode him off into the wall. Wasn't fooled by any of the speed or the moves or anything like that. And, you know, I was very impressed by that, you know, going up against a nifty player like that. And, you know, so, you know, here's a guy who was drafted in the second round, right-handed shooting defenseman in 2024. We talked about Zimmer, the third-round pick as a true freshman at Minnesota. If he wasn't a good player, he wouldn't be playing as a true freshman at the University of Minnesota. And then the year before that, there are two second-round picks, Anton Wahlberg, who I still think is a good prospect in Rochester, and Maxim Sturbik, another big right-handed shooting defenseman who plays at Michigan State. So, you know, the cupboard is not bare. You know, I take a look at Isak Rosanne. I'm not sure that's a guy that is going to make it or not. I just haven't been overly impressed when he's wound up in Buffalo. I think this is a big year for him, maybe a make it or break it year for him. As far as, you know, is he going to be an NHL player? Is he not? So, no, I would not go along with the prospect pool is empty.
And then Alex Tuch, his situation, Paul. It is past July 1st, obviously. We're here at the 3rd of July. He is eligible to sign an extension with the Sabres. He has 1 year left in his deal. What did Kevin Adams say, if anything, about that situation?
He's talked to the agent, and, you know, he said he's told the agent in no uncertain terms how they feel about Alex Tuch and how important he is to them. It didn't need to be done yesterday. So, you know, they needed to get themselves through free agency, and there are a lot of trade calls that come around and before and after free agency. So, you know, that's something I think that is going to be picked up very soon, but get through this part of, you know, what they were trying to do, and then start, you know, getting down to brass tacks with that. But, they, you know, they have made contact, but it's just, you know, the key negotiations are still to come.
That horn means you are off the clock, Paul Hamilton. I'll let you go watch the next 30 minutes. Listen, have a great 4th of July weekend and, you know, into next week. I'll be headed to Italy next week. I don't know how much you and I are going to be talking, but I will see you at training camp when I get back. I'm positive of that. In the meantime, thanks a lot this week. I know you've been all over and doing a lot, so I really appreciate your time, man.
You're not going to be doing your show from Italy?
You know what? I don't think so. You never know what happens when you're out in good old Italy.
I don't think your wife would be too pleased about that if you're doing.
She may say no. You go ahead and do that. I am walking this direction or that direction. Listen, I will tell you. A few years ago, we were there. I was maybe 10, 15 before Max was born, actually. And I always say, if you walked in a different direction every day, you would still see the most amazing, oldest, incredible stuff you've ever seen in your life. Unbelievable when you go to Europe and see that.
Yeah, I'd love to be there, get to Italy sometime.
All right, buddy. Hey, enjoy your weekend and the rest of the prospect camp today. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, have fun there, and we'll see you after we get back.
I don't know if I've shared this with anybody, but I knew I was retiring when we played in Buffalo. The Giants were playing there. It was a game where it was really controversial because one of the guys held me at the end. They didn't call it. It was in the first quarter of the game. We were running like this counter lead running play, and I'm kind of like leading through the hole like I'm a fullback, and the play is working. But I sit down on the sideline after like a drive where we ran like three times, and I'm like, what am I doing with my life? I'm out here playing fullback. I don't even want to do this anymore. And I'm just like looking at the moon. It's like early first quarter, second quarter. Nobody else would really even know that I'm thinking this, but I'm on the sideline like, yep, I'm going to finish this year to the best of my ability, but I'm definitely done playing.
That is Darren Waller.
Who hasn't just once in a while just looked up at the moon?
I love that. We're all at the stadium. I remember that game. You know, the Bills win it against Tyrod and the Giants, and it was one of those ones where they win and we're mad because the offense looks like everything is hard.
14-9.
And meanwhile, during that game, Darren Waller looked at the moon and said, I'm retiring. Joe Marino joining us on the Western Hotline. Joe of the Locked On Bills podcast. Joe, you ever look at the moon and think about retirement? You know, I mean, it's just like Darren Waller.
I'm not sure I've been there. Maybe one day I'll get there.
Yeah.
That was only week six, too. Yeah. Like, he played the rest of that season.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Well, Darren Waller's back for the Dolphins. Joe and I spent a little time talking about him, kind of remembering his career, and he was mildly productive in that final season with the Giants, and here's Miami pulling Waller out of retirement. He had had an off-field injury scare and kind of lost his love of the game. I don't know. Like, I'm sure there's plenty of feeling of a desperation move here for Miami. It is basically free. But welcome back, Darren Waller, who the Bills presumably will see twice.
Yeah, it's hard to really get good expectations for what Darren Waller is going to do this year as a player that retired, like you mentioned. He's obviously into his 30s now. It's been a while since he's been a big-time impact player in the league. So, obviously, the need's pretty big for Miami at tight end and trading away Jonnu Smith and what they had in his replacements, Farrell Brown and another like depth player that's been there for a few years, Julian Hill. But it's quite the pivot because that Jonnu Smith role was really important for them last year, and I thought it opened up a lot for their overall offense, kind of having a third guy established to go with Waddle and Hill. And it says this doesn't feel like an upgrade in Eddie Veeds. I don't really know what to expect from him.
Yeah, it's so strange, like to have found money there in Jonnu Smith and what he really gave to them, and then to just say goodbye. You know, Joe Marino of the Locked On Bills podcast. Of course, we're always talking about the teams in the division. Miami has been a challenger for the Bills a couple of years, but come up short. The general feeling on Miami, Joe, if we could just stick here for a minute, is everybody seems to think, what are they doing exactly? The trade of Ramsey, I guess it got sour. The trade of Smith, they don't want to pay him. Their coach is back for another year. Tyreek Hill is concerned so much with Noah Lyles and racing. Like, Miami is very much in a what are they doing spot, and I'm not sure if you think Minka Fitzpatrick solves any of their problems either.
No, I don't think Minka solves anything. I say that's a bigger return than I was expecting for Ramsey. I thought they would trade Ramsey for like a fifth-round pick, so getting Minka Fitzpatrick back and what that can mean for their safety room, I think, is a big deal. But obviously, corner is just a massive concern, and they've got some cap space, so they'll probably sign somebody that's hopefully for them a functional starter. But this is definitely a peculiar year for Miami, and it certainly feels like, based on the choices they've made with the investments in the offensive line with James Daniels and Larry Borum, and they traded up for Jonas Savianaya, and then they added a couple of bigger backs in Ollie Gordon and Alexander Mattison. You know, I think this team wants to become more inside run oriented, kind of a pivot you saw from Sean McVay and the Rams a few years ago, where everything was wide zone, pushing the perimeter, and then the Rams pivoted, and they got some bigger physical interior offensive linemen, some bigger backs, and started to really incorporate that. And so, yeah, I think that's where they want to go. I think they want to be a more physical downhill run team, and then obviously get their passing game going. It's still about Waddle and Hill, but last year that Jonnu Smith role in some ways was to overcome some of the deficiencies running the football, where they just didn't have the blocking talent on the edges to be a consistent offense that runs the ball. And I think they've made some personnel changes to kind of get them in a better position to do that. But my questions with Miami are really on defense. I think their offense is going to be fine. If Tua's healthy, there'll be a good offense. But defensively, what do they have in that secondary? A corner is just a big black eye. They're counting on Bradley Chubb and Jalen Phillips to come back from injury. They really didn't do anything last year, either of those players. Still very young on the defensive line outside of Zach Sealer on the interior players. So they got some stuff to figure out there defensively, and they'll have to coach above their talent to be a team that is in the mix for the playoffs, but could blow up, I feel like there's certainly not a lot of good momentum there in Miami.
Real quick, back to Waller for a moment. If he's healthy, will that work? I mean, is that the type of tight end this run game needs. I mean, here he is talking about he knew he wanted to retire when they were putting him in at fullback to block. I mean, that's a – I feel like that's a troubling sign that he left the game because of that. And if you're Miami that has a tight end, that wants a tight end to run block, you might not be getting that.
No, not at all. Darren Waller is not going to help at all with the run blocking. He's a move tight end, right? He's a flex player that is probably more of a big slot than anything, even different than Jonnu Smith. I think of Jonnu Smith as more of a wing type player, kind of attached offset player, where Waller's not really going to help you in inline formations with the blocking, right? So to me, this also signals that Miami wants to get back to more 11 personnel. And maybe like that would get away from what I was kind of getting to with being less of an outside zone crack toss oriented run scheme and be more of an inside run team that relies less on your perimeter blockers and more on your interior guys where they have some bigger players. And then, you know, you want to be able to space the field a little bit with formational width by having more spread formations. And then that's how you maximize Darren Waller when you have the speed elements of Hill and Waddle. So I think that's kind of the vision for their offense. But, you know, Waller specifically does not help their run game in any way, shape, or form.
Joe Marino on the Locked On Bills podcast joining us here on WGR. 3 weeks out from camp, the Steelers side of it, Jalen Ramsey and also getting Jonnu Smith. You know, the Steelers here, they are loading up, Joe, and the Bills will play Pittsburgh once. What is their ceiling, do you think, on this one-year Aaron Rodgers experiment?
I think they can probably – I mean, this is a team that's had worse quarterbacks than Aaron Rodgers, worse offensive lines than they have right now, and I would say worse defenses than they have right now, and still win 9 or 10 games and get to the playoffs and lose a game. So I think that their roster is in pretty good shape. I don't love Aaron Rodgers at all at quarterback, and I think he somewhat limits the team, but can he be better than Kenny Pickett? Can he be better than Mason Rudolph and – they're trying to just figure it out. Justin Fields, Russell Wilson. I think he can be, you know, something like that. And with the elevated offensive line and the young pieces they have there, and I think their defense is pretty loaded, especially in the front. I think they're going to be a good team. I worry about Aaron Rodgers and whether or not he can just play his part. And I think that's been a challenge for Aaron Rodgers in his last two healthy seasons, was just playing his part and understanding how his game has to evolve based on some of his physical limitations. I still think the arm's there. I think he can make really good, accurate throws. But what made Aaron Rodgers a special player was how he can move within the pocket and extend plays and use his arm arrogance to do stuff. But I don't think he has the type of twitch and movement skills in the pocket anymore to do that. So can he just run the offense? And now you're looking at an offense that has these three tight ends and Washington, Freiermuth, and Jonnu Smith, a big receiver in Metcalf. Calvin Austin's kind of coming on. Like, Arthur Smith is the play caller here. There's going to be a lot of design stuff and play action and building off of the run concepts and a lot of, you know, you involving the backs and tight ends and some quick passes. Like, will he just do that, or will he want to kind of play off script the way that we've seen him his last two healthy seasons? I think it's a big wild card. But, Jeremy, I think you've convinced me if Pittsburgh goes to the playoffs and wins a game, I think that'd be pretty successful for kind of what the narratives have been out of Pittsburgh the last several years.
It would definitely rehab both Rodgers and Tomlin in their current versions, which you know, both have been thought to be great. Both are probably Hall of Famers, but right now they might need each other to just get a little bit of a positive pub out of each other.
Yeah, I agree. And I always wonder, like, what is – the ownership think of Mike Tomlin? You know, is it different than what we do? Is there some grace for not necessarily giving him a quarterback? How much blame does he get for the miscalculations at quarterback, but still being able to get the team to winning records in the postseason? Like, there's some tough layers there, but obviously the most important thing in the league is quarterback play, and they just haven't had it. And so on one hand, I don't expect him to go win playoff games with Mason Rudolph and Russell Wilson at this point in his career. And do I give Tomlin a lot of credit for being there? Yeah, I mean, in some ways, yes, but how much criticism does he get for not getting the quarterback piece right? And it feels like he's had a role. I mean, Trubisky, miscalculation. Kenny Pickett's a miscalculation. Russell Wilson, miscalculation. It's been pretty bad. And even late-stage Ben Roethlisberger really was tough to watch, but they still won games. So the credit-blame piece of Mike Tomlin can get a little complicated.
It really would feel like they'd have to get that AFC South matchup in the first round, wouldn't it? Because I they could pull off, any team could pull off, it's the NFL, but nobody, I think, would envision them going to Kansas City or come here and win a playoff game like that.
Yeah, or Baltimore. I think if you're not Buffalo, Kansas City, or Baltimore, your whole objective in the AFC is to be the 5 seed and go play in Houston. Yep. Right, that's what you want to happen, and hope that Houston doesn't take advantage of that bad division and wind up winning 12 games and being a top 3 seed in the conference. I think that's what the story is in the AFC. Pittsburgh, I think, can Pittsburgh be the 5 and go beat Houston? Sure. You know, and I think that'd be a great year for them if that's what they can do. I don't think they can go any further, but I think that would be successful. I think that would, like, turn around some things with how Tomlin's perceived, and Rodgers certainly – I don't think many people think fondly of what's happened to him over the last few years. And I think if he goes out like that, I think that'd be a solid ending.
Joe Marino, Locked On Bills podcast. All right, Joe, we are 3 weeks away from the start of training camp. You know, we're getting there. Wednesday, 3 weeks from today, we'll be at St. John Fisher. What is the number one thing you are eager to see, you know, in the first couple practices? Like, if you're there and you get to go watch a position group or go watch any one thing, what's the thing you would be most interested to see when you get there?
Yeah, I could say so many things, but you want me to pick one thing. I think I want to watch the corners. I want to see what type of comfort Maxwell Harrison has in his assignments. I want to see what type of athleticism Trey White has, if he winds up having to start games this year, you know, what type of comfort exists there. I'm curious about, like, Dorian Strong and what type of ability he shows. Jordan Hancock, I want to see what the role is going to be as this, like, hybrid slot safety player. You know, I think that's where my eyes are going to be. Cole Bishop's development is probably the secondary.
Yeah.
I could talk myself into D-line. I certainly want to see these receivers. I want to see Kincaid, but it's probably the corners with the investments, overall investments in that secondary, and see how it's coming along.
You know, to pick between the D-line and the corners, would you be, I don't know, like, confidence is one, or variables of range of outcomes? I feel like what they've done on the defensive line, I expect that to be a pretty good, solid unit. I feel like Bosa, if healthy, along with, you know, the pieces they added in the draft, and Michael Hoyt and Ogunjobi once they get back, they've got veterans there, right? It's not a bunch of kids hoping to figure it out. So that might lead me to be a little more confident that that'll be good to go. But I don't know. That doesn't really have to be true. Would you have confidence up front that they're going to be a better unit than last year, just based on the sheer volume of changes that they made?
Yeah, they really should. And, I mean, you think about what's departing. It's 36-year-old Von Miller, and then 3 north of 30 defensive tackles in Austin Johnson, Jordan Phillips, and Quentin Jefferson, and all 4 of those guys are still looking for work. And that's what you said goodbye to while you welcome in, you know, draft picks, established veterans. I feel like that should be in good shape. I mean, my goodness, with all the investments there, we cannot be having conversations next January and February about where was the defensive line impact. They've done the things that they needed to do to give themselves a chance to avoid that conversation. I think more of the uncertainty probably comes from the secondary, and obviously the secondary will benefit from what happens up front with their ability to wreak havoc and create pressure and create sacks and force pressured throws. But, yeah, I think there's a little bit more uncertainty with how the secondary comes together.
What about Milano for you, Joe, in linebacker at training camp and into the preseason? He might not play in the preseason, but the range of outcomes that we could get from him, how wide do you kind of consider that to be? Seeing him at the end of last year, but he also dealt with injuries and finally gets a full healthy offseason. I don't know, how wide do you think it is from the best case scenario for his 25 season to the worst case scenario?
Well, I think we saw him steadily improve upon his return last year. That gives me a lot of encouragement. I don't think it's going to be an issue of if he's available to play, right, and he's not injured, like, and can't play, I think he's going to be at least as good as he was at the end of last season. I'm not super concerned that there's been athleticism zapped out of him. You know, we've seen plenty of linebackers that are playing into their mid to late 30s, and Milano's going to be 31 this year. he's not that old. I think he'll be okay. It's just a matter of how durable can he be, because if he's available, I have a level of confidence that he can go out there and be an impact player for the defense. It's just, can he avoid something that's going to keep him off the field? And I think that's where my concerns lie. So if Milano can go, I feel good about what he can provide. It's, can he go, right? Is there going to be something along the way that keeps him on the sideline? And I think that's where the impact would be lost. It'd just be due to availability. If he's on the field, I have a level of confidence in Matt Milano and what he can get done for this defense.
Joe Marino, Locked On Bills podcast, joining us here on the Western Hotline, 3 weeks out from training camp. I know, Joe, one of your newest episodes you put out was about Joe Brady and wrinkles to the offense. And Joe and I here got in a conversation about Kincaid earlier. It kind of just flew off of the Waller return to the NFL. Is Kincaid someone you feel like Brady can get a lot more out of than he has?
Yeah, 100%. And I think you start with acknowledging that per route run last year, Dalton Kincaid was the most targeted tight end in the NFL. Like, the Bills want to throw him the ball. And he's had two seasons of really good route running metrics in terms of separation rates and two really good seasons of yards after catch metrics. So it really just comes down to, can Josh Allen and Dalton Kincaid develop the chemistry that's necessary to maximize the opportunities that exist for Dalton Kincaid? And I think, of course, Dalton Kincaid needs to be durable and available and be stronger, right? Have the functional strength that the team's kind of called him out now for a couple of years on. That's what needs to happen. But ultimately, the opportunity is certainly there. And the role last year really was different. His average depth of target increased by 2 yards. Compared to the previous year. So I like where it's going, the idea of where it's going, if you will. It's just a matter of becoming more consistent with the outcome of the opportunities that he gets, which is partly on him. It's partly on Josh Allen. But I think as things become more stable, there was so much turnover last year with the offense. And I think that entering this year with really no turnover, I mean, you pretty much just say goodbye to Cooper and Hollins. You say hello to Palmer and Moore, and everything else is the same. Like, even the depth, the coaching staff, it should put this team in position to hit the ground running. And, I was actually recently going back and referencing a lot of the notes that I took throughout the course of last season. And last year, that team, third downs was not very good. They were running like 11 less plays per game than they were the previous season. And by the end of the year, the offense normalized and figured itself out. And so I think this offense is so much better equipped to hit the ground running this year. And it's no longer, Dalton Kincaid stepping in and there's a million vacated targets. I think there's a little bit more of an understanding of what everyone's going to need to do. And I think they'll hit the ground running a lot better than they did last year.
You also did a show building the Bills quarter century team. What did you find is the toughest position to decide on for that?
I guess maybe linebacker, because one thing that was pretty revealing to me is that the Bills haven't had a ton of like linebackers that were very long tenured players. It was 4 years of London Fletcher and 3 years of Takiyo Spikes and Preston Brown for 4 years, but it wasn't even that good. So it's like I wind up picking Matt Milano and London Fletcher, and London Fletcher was only like a 4 year answer for the team. And I guess that's a decent tenure for the Bills or for any team, right? Or for any player. But I just felt like that was the one position where it's like, man, there's not like a true anchor here where you've had 8-10 years of really good play. So it's just a lot of different guys sneaking in. Kawika Mitchell, had his moment in the sun. So I guess that was probably the spot.
Yeah, because you had 4 year stints for like four different. I mean, Paul Posluszny is 4 years, right? Yeah, like, right. It's just 4 years, 4 years, 4 years. Yeah.
Joe and I talked about this, the quarter century team, and there's one spot we disagreed, and whatever. It's honorable mentions. I'll ask you, Sneaky Joe.
Uh-huh.
Well, who are the two defensive ends should be on that team?
The two defensive ends
on the Bills all quarter century team. Who'd you pick?
Schobel and Mario.
Okay. All right. Well, we have a complete this is perfect.
I thought about that for 3 seconds though.
That's fine.
Yeah.
He went Schobel and Jerry Hughes.
Uh-huh.
You went Schobel and Mario. For me, Mario has to be on the list because he was, borderline dominant.
It's a peak versus longevity conversation here. Does Hughes play more than double the games that Mario Williams does? But I remember Joe, I think it was maybe in Hughes' last year where he finally passed Williams on like the sack list. So, but again, like if you're going for someone who made an impact over a long period of time, I'm not going to argue hard against anyone that wants to put Jerry Hughes on there.
Yeah, I think that's where the disagreement came, and I don't have an argument for it. I mean, if you want to go with who had the most dominant stretch, I mean, it was the first three years of Mario Williams, and I think that's a heck of a case. But I leaned into the longevity. I mean, there was a point in time where he was, for many years, the longest tenured player on the team, and had a good run. But nope, he wasn't as dominant as Mario was for those 3 years.
Part of Schoble's, I don't know, mystique is that he retired and he just disappeared, right?
Never to be heard from again.
If they rolled out Aaron Schoble as legend of the game this year, right?
Like, oh, it'd be crazy. I remember Eric Wood getting. I think at one point Mike or Chris asked Eric Wood about. I was like, I don't think I've talked to him since like we played together.
He's just gone. So anyway,
the other mystique is I think his best stat is he has the most sacks on Tom Brady ever.
All right,
I think he still has that title. He had it at one point. So I'll look that up.
Thanks, Joe.
Thanks for having me on, guys. Appreciate it.
Joe Marino, Locked On Bills podcast. He also does the Bills Squad Show with me and Jerry Ostrowski every Monday and Thursday. That's part of the Bills. It's part of the Locked On Bills channel. You can stream that on YouTube.
It's Sal Capaccio.
I make a special capaccio for you, right?
Jeez. Oh, now that sounds really good.
Oh, you like?
Hey, get away! Get away from my wife with that!
What's the matter, carpaccio, no good?
What do you do now?
They don't like a carpaccio.
They like carpaccio.
Oh. On WGR.
I make a carpaccio for you.
Sports Radio 550.
Just quickly to finish the conversation we were having during the break.
Uh-oh.
We're watching Wimbledon. And Bulldog said, you know, we almost played tennis that one time. You want to say it?
Yeah, I didn't have the right shoes to go to the tennis and squash club, which is where we were going to go play. And so that got kiboshed. I thought we maybe talked about doing it at Delaware Park another time, which, you know, shoes wouldn't matter. And I don't know what happened to that. But then
you said you like to hit the ball, but you don't think you could move well.
I'm not sure I can safely move laterally anymore.
I have just the perfect idea for you.
Pickleball?
You should play with my wife.
Oh,
she'll hit the ball right to me. The whole time. Every time. Tell her how far you can move, how many feet laterally you can move. You will never have to move outside of that distance. You might have to come, you know, fetch balls once in a while. Rallies end.
Yeah, right.
But, you know, you're not going to have to go line to line. Don't worry about it.
I can arrange this. I can't get on the tennis court with your wife. No.
Well, you're not going to play with me if you don't want to run, because I'm not good enough. You'll run. And so will I. Sal Capaccio on the Wester Hotline. Is there any tennis playing in Sal's life?
I did play a little bit in college with a buddy of mine he enjoyed tennis. I don't think I've played since then at all. Played some pickleball, believe it or not. We actually had pickleball in gym class in the late 80s, early 90s.
Whoa.
And I know, isn't that crazy? Had a coach who actually has since passed away, but he founded the Trench Trophy, Carl Curris. And we played pickleball in gym class back then. And it's amazing to me now that it's out there and people think it's this new game. It's actually not. And I tell people, no, I actually literally played this in high school. Kind of crazy to think about. As far as tennis is concerned, I don't think, Mike, I've played tennis probably since college.
I am almost positive I still have a tennis racket in a cover buried underneath like motorcycle parts and golf clubs that are, you know, that have been retired. Like there's a storage space in our basement that has stuff like that on it. I think at the bottom, like maybe we moved in there, the first thing I put in there was, this is tennis racket. I'm going to put it there. And it has never moved.
Still there.
I think it should still be there.
It might need to be restrung.
Yeah, it might be a little not up to code.
I am thinking about the pickleball thing lately. Like, I'm like, yeah, this is like, I enjoyed it when I played in high school. And I think it's a sport that I could get into at an older age now, trying to stay active. I did enjoy racquetball in college, though, too. And I haven't played that in a long time. But, man, that was a workout.
Yeah.
Squash, too.
There are people playing pickleball and tennis. That's how this came up. We're watching Wimbledon in here. And I said to Mike, you know, every time I ride around the park, Delaware Park, there's people playing tennis. There's also,
which is great to see.
Yeah, it is. And there's even I'm pretty sure there's a guy that gives lessons or something. There's one guy that I see all the time that's always meeting different people. So I'm assuming that's some sort of a lesson happening. But the courts that are on the other side, closer to the 198, that are not in as great a shape, there are always people there playing pickleball too. Mornings, most weekday mornings.
I shouldn't say this because I'm admittedly speaking out of school, but in the pickleball related conversations I've had with like tennis people who are maybe biased or just in general, the thing I always hear is that it's bad for injuries, which is maybe counterintuitive because you're not running, like you're not going to turn an ankle playing pickleball, but because of the lack of resistance in the ball, you know, the tennis elbow stuff is even like more exaggerated. So I don't know if I can prove that. I'm not prepared to, but I've heard that numerous times about pickleball. It seems like a sport you'd play to not expect to get hurt.
Right, lower impact.
But
yeah,
shoulder, elbow, wrist, maybe it's not quite that way.
I want to add here, Bulldog, I mean, you know me. I also just randomly walk around Delaware Park meeting people. I'm not giving lessons. I just like to go around Delaware Park and meeting people.
I thought when he said that, he was probably talking about you. I just couldn't tell from a distance if it was you. I've got a Keon Coleman take. It's not even really a take, but so I was reading an article about him today that was very negative, and I've seen the opposite. You know, all our guests, we usually end up talking to most of them anyway about Keon Coleman at one point. It's always about the receivers in here, as you know, and I wonder if there is a greater range of outcomes, predictions for Coleman this year than even before his rookie season. I mean, every rookie comes with that. Who knows what they're going to be? Is he good enough for the league? Is he great? That happens. Justin Jefferson happens. Jalen Reagor also happens. Huge range of outcomes. It just sounds like this year there are people who think Keon Coleman will take off. Bigger role, experience, Brandon Bean every time reminding you how he's only 21 or so young. And then there are also people like there was no separation. There was not enough on tape to be optimistic. Is that how you hear it or see it?
Yeah, he's an interesting guy for me because I just think he does have a lot of talent, but it's also going to be about opportunity, right? And I think that this kind of goes for the entire offense and everybody and this particular team. The Bills are structured just differently. And, you know, I don't want to sound like Brandon Bean when I say this, but it is true that, like, we get focused on a bit of the numbers game and fantasy football and stats. And not to be critical of that particular way of looking at it, but I think that's why people look at the numbers and say, well, where's his range of outcome? For the Bills, his range of outcome is how can he help us win? Like, what can he be a part of this cog that helps us win? And I think of him and I think of Dalton Kincaid. Like, I think it's very hard to see both him and Dalton Kincaid having these really great bounce back smash seasons. Although Dalton Kincaid still was, I think, number two guy last year in, you know, targets. Let me take a look at the Bills. I think he was number two. He was 75 targets, 44 catches. Keon Coleman was number three, 57 targets, 29 catches. I mean, it's hard to see both those guys having some big jump when you have the other guys that you've brought in, the guys you have. And Khalil Shakir, obviously, number one, but you know, you have to add Curtis Samuel, a healthy Curtis Samuel, and Elijah Moore, and then Joshua Palmer they sign. So I think it's a tough way to kind of, it's a very nuanced point here. I don't think you have to have the super production to say that Keon Coleman had a much better year or really helped this team. It truly is, and this isn't a cop-out, I really believe, for the Bills. It just comes down to, can this guy really make the plays when we need him to make the plays and be a big part of what we're trying to do overall?
And I thought the signs were trending quite positively on that last year before he got hurt, and then it just really never was the same. Is that's how
Agreed.
You remember it, right?
I do. Yeah. I mean, I thought he really was playing football like they kind of anticipated him to kind of grow and play football, right? And by the way, that's not just catching the ball. Obviously, that's running routes, but in the blocking game, in the run game. I know that like people kind of poo-poo that. I get it. He's a wide receiver, but it's important. That's Gabe Davis never left the field because he was a really good blocker. Now, granted, he wasn't the best receiver. I get it. But like, it was an important role. Mac Hollins was on the field because it was an important role for what they needed. His production wasn't great. But if you can get a guy who can also help in that in that area, and then you can throw him passes. I mean, that's your kind of your ticket to being on the field for the Buffalo Bills, especially a guy like this who I think does have, you know, the capability to make those big plays. But yes, you take a look at what his numbers were. Take a look at when he started to kind of really come around. There was a middle game stretch. He had 4 catches for 125, 5 catches for 70, 1 catch for 64 a couple of weeks later. That was the broken play against Detroit. But again, a 64-yard play that's mixed in there. That's what I mean. Like, there's going to be opportunities for him to make some plays, and then suddenly he winds up, you know, getting hurt as well, and then he misses, you know, a bunch of time. He comes back, and it just never popped after that. It was really just a catch here, a catch there.
Yeah, that this point, this fundamental point about like what constitutes success as far as the mm-hmm. Bills are concerned, and not like, you know, in terms of statistics, is really why the discussion is so interesting. Because your point you're making is, if he doesn't have numbers, that doesn't mean necessarily that he's a failure. It's the role and the team results, and some of it we won't even pick up on necessarily.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And last year serves as some example of a team there. Like, the numbers are just kind of not great in a lot of cases, but look at the team results. And that's what really is so interesting about it. And the tough part for Coleman on, say, your side of this argument, or Kincaid, is that when it comes to their draft capital, it's about the player. You know, it becomes about, well, you only got this many catches and it ranked X for a wide receiver or a tight end, and that shouldn't have been a first round pick. So if they win a Super Bowl, I think that's what it takes. But if they win a Super Bowl, right, like I've said a million times, it's all good. You can't criticize a single thing. All of it added up to a team championship. But say you have to use last year again, you get to the AFC Championship, and it's a two-minute warning, and you're right in the game with Kansas City, and Kincaid drops a pass. What's the number one story of his season? That play. Like, it's one play. So it's not, I think, ever going to be completely fair in either direction. I mean, quarterbacks, Mahomes, what's Mahomes if he doesn't get read? I mean, maybe he's not even, who knows? I don't know. I'm not making a prediction there. But the team part of all these equations is what really makes it fun to talk about, although sometimes unfulfilling because you don't always get to the answer.
And obviously, like, if you're a general manager, if you're a head coach, you're a person in the organization, you know, let's use a couple of the really great wide receivers in this league, Justin Jefferson and Ja'Marr Chase. Like, I mean, let's say if those are, you know, the two top receivers in whatever order you want to say. Like, are you sitting there going, we would rather have that guy and hit it, and then we could say, like, we hit on our first-round pick. He was great. Or, in this case, Keon Coleman was obviously a second-round pick. He was top of the second round. You know, or do you want to have the team success that the Buffalo Bills have and the Kansas City Chiefs have, who, oh, by the way, did not have a wide receiver hit 60 catches last year. Xavier Worthy had 59 catches last year. He topped out at their position at wide receiver. They had a tight end, Travis Kelce, who had the most. Like, they didn't have a wide receiver hit 60 catches, and their next best was 41 for DeAndre Hopkins. Like, I'm quite sure that everybody who works in these organizations would rather have that particular situation than say, let me show you this object over here, Justin Jefferson, Ja'Marr Chase, but didn't come with the wins and the success we had. And that's why it's kind of a tough thing to talk about sometimes, because you're right, Mike. You spent a first-round pick. Why did you spend it? Did you spend it to have the numbers like a Chase or a Jefferson, or just under that, you know, that kind of guy are putting up? Or did you spend it to be a big part of your success and what you're doing as a team? And the Bills would say the latter for sure.
I just think yes, but Kansas City is different from Buffalo in that context because they've won. And like the Bills conversation is how to get past Kansas City. And I know Kansas City lost this year, but still, like, they've won three. So
they've been in the title game every year.
Clyde Edwards-Hilaire is the player for this, for the Chiefs, I think. Like, they picked a running back, last pick of the first round. Might as well have been Coleman, right? One pick away. Different year, obviously. Mm-hmm. But, you know, was that a bad pick? Sure. Heck, how could you say not? Yeah. But they've won rings.
He got replaced by a seventh rounder.
Yeah, like, of course, you know, you'd rather have the team success. You'd also maybe rather have had Jonathan Taylor in that moment than CEH. Or I might say maybe not, because then you're running more or something. I've gotten there at times. Let me use the
Ravens as another example for this, right? I mean, Zay Flowers had 1,000 yards. He had a very nice year. I would never take that away. I mean, he had the same amount of catches as Khalil Shakir. I think Shakir had one more, right? 76, 75, I think, actually. I was looking at him the other day. Right? Shakir was 821. He didn't have the yards. And then the next best wide receiver for the Baltimore Ravens was, let me just look this up real quick. I think it was pretty low. If you go to the Ravens, they had tight ends, obviously.
It's Bateman.
Bateman had 45 catches. So, you know, it's funny to me, right? You think about the best teams in the AFC. I think the Eagles are different. The Eagles obviously have Brown, and he's great, and they have a pair of really good wide receivers, and that's kind of the standard, right? Like, okay, yeah, but look at the Eagles. No doubt. I understand that, and they won the Super Bowl, so that's the gold standard. In the AFC, the best teams happen to be teams that really don't have, like, that true number one, big-time number wide receiver.
Unless
guy.
The they Bengals have guys get back that, there. Yeah, right.
Right, because they're not there right now, though, right? But that's the point. And the AFC, that's what those teams are. Even the Texans, I mean, they have some really good guys, but they go and play the Chiefs. But, you know, the Texans, they had some injuries. They did a nice job to kind of patchwork what they had. But they have some talented guys. But it's just the numbers-wise, the best teams in the AFC don't have that top guy.
That could change. I think Collins is better than any of those other ones.
He's really good.
Like, he's not better really than Chase, good. But he's better than Flowers or Shakir easily or Worthy. Hopkins, you would have stumped me on Hopkins finishing second. I mean, I've already forgotten he was there, DeAndre Hopkins in Kansas City. Now he's in Baltimore, by the way.
Yeah, and I'll respect the Collins point. He did have 1,000 yards last year despite missing five games, right. Which is amazing, right? He's a stud, no doubt about it.
He got hurt on the long touchdown pass against the Bills, and he was out more than a month after that play, which was weird. Who saw that?
I had John Harris on. You guys have talked to John, my sideline buddy over there in Houston, and I had him on Extra Points Show a couple weeks ago. It doesn't sound like Tank Dell's going to play this year at all.
No.
It was just really, really tough for them, you know, and really tough for him, obviously.
Do you like their vibes? Houston, I'm looking for ways to bet against them, but maybe I'm trying too hard.
No, I would. Do I like their vibes? I just don't love how it's been going for them with the changes they've made. Like, what happened to CJ Stroud? And then they get rid of their offensive coordinator who really kind of had a great, you know, first year with Stroud and then obviously not as great of a second year. I don't know what they're doing on the offensive line. By the way, Bobby Slowick, he went to Miami. He's running their passing game. I think he's the passing game coordinator for the Miami Dolphins now. So, no, I don't like their vibes, to be quite honest with you, to answer your question, Mike.
Bobby Slowick, what did Miami need a passing game coordinator for? Didn't they have a pretty good one? But, all right, you know, you want to have that. I guess you want to have that. Training camp, Sal, 3 weeks from today, did I see? 23rd.
That would make sense. Today's Wednesday. I'm just looking at the date. Yeah, 3 weeks from today. Today's the 21 days, 23rd. So they'll report on the 22nd, no media. It's not like years ago where we'd be camped out in the media and, you know, with video of guys bringing refrigerators
TVs
and beer into the dorms, right?
Yeah, right.
That's not happening. Right. So, you know, so not suggesting, I don't even know if they have beer in their dorms, but, you know, back in the day, you'd get like, oh, what are you bringing in? Oh, yeah, got to be ready, got to get in for a long few weeks. The team will report on the 22nd, and the first practice will be on the 23rd.
Very good. Big plans for the 4th.
You know what? I have a graduation party to go to out in Rochester, so I think we're going to do that. And then next week, I'm actually headed up next week, guys. On Monday, I will be playing at Oakdale up in Canada where the Canadian Open was held because I will be playing in the Zach Hyman charity golf event.
Right,
Zach is a big Bills fan. Gotten to know Zach and his family over the last few years. Unfortunate for him, obviously, with the wrist injury, obviously, you know, so, you know, and I've really obviously wanted the Oilers to win the last couple of years. I'd love to, because if the Oilers win, then the cup is coming to that thing, right?
Right.
I mean, that's really
right.
What's going to happen. And obviously that's not the case now, but it's a really great event. I got to play with Carlo Colaiacovo last year, and I think this year I'm playing with Jay McKee, actually.
Oh, nice.
Oh, that's awesome. Good deal.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, please give him our
cool.
best. Yeah.
Yeah, I will. No doubt about it. And then I'm leaving for Italy on Wednesday.
That's what I was going to ask you. When is that happening? All right.
Leaving for Italy on Wednesday, gone for that week and then the following week, and then I'll be back here a couple of days before training camp begins and then right off to camp.
Very good. Enjoy your weekend.
Thanks, guys. You too. Happy 4th.
All right. Same to you. That's our dude, Sal Capaccio, on the West Her Hotline. His appearances are always brought to you by New York's only outlet, Liquor. When you need to stock up, it's the place to buy a case. What's your outlet?
Bobby Slowick, by the way, is the new Miami Dolphins senior passing game coordinator.
Oh, all right.
He doesn't have full claim to the passing game. He's the senior passing game coordinator. And his brother, Ryan, is the Dolphins' defensive passing game specialist.
Boy.
What's that?
Lunches must be fun in that house.
Defensive passing game specialist. Will it ever end?
No.
Will we live long enough to have NFL teams house 100 coaches? And it's, I mean, just every corporate title you can think of is just sort of smacked onto these guys' labels.
Yes. Yes.
Why yeah, not? You're not we'll trying if you don't have
yeah.
that.
I think we will. Yeah. I mean, assistants to the assistants to the, yeah, I mean, sure. We'll get there.
Senior passing game coordinator, defensive passing game specialist. This is PFF Bobby we're talking about here. Bobby Slowick, late of the Texans.
It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
I don't think Michael's ever done drugs.
It's Mike Shope.
I don't know if anyone's ever offered him any.
Let's go over some of the symptoms of marijuana use, shall we? You tell me who this sounds like.
It's the Bulldog.
Slow moving. Inattentive. Dull. Constantly snacking. Shows a lack of motivation.
It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog on WGR Sports Radio 550.
Welcome back, an early happy 4th to everybody listening. Mike Shope and the Bulldog here. If you missed Bulldog's birthday extravaganza yesterday, maybe you could still listen to it on the Odyssey app, on-demand audio. It was just a day ago. People are talking about it. You have maybe about as good a chance running into somebody who's talking about it. But it's definitely worth looking that up.
It was a day.
Lots of famous guests. Here with us now, another famous guest, Aaron Schatz, FTN Fantasy, longtime Football Outsiders, and guest of ours.
Couldn't fit him in yesterday, so we had to wait
for many years. Aaron, I'm not going to deprive you of the chance to wish Bulldog birthday wishes here, even though it was yesterday.
Hey, happy day after your birthday.
Thank you, Aaron.
Before we get into the meat of things, I loved from your Twitter last week the stat about, the note about Pete Banaszak and John Banaszak not being related, and nobody else has ever had that name. There's also a Banaszak in the 70s. And it made me think of, Aaron, maybe you know this. If anybody would, it'd be Aaron Schatz. But the Youngbloods on the Rams were not related, and neither were the Pruitts on the Browns.
Correct. They were not related. That's right. Yep.
And I saw a highlight, because I'm watching a lot of old stuff all the time, and it was a Browns highlight from maybe the early 80s. And on the back of the Pruitt jerseys, it had the first initial at the end, Pruitt, G, and Pruitt, M. And I never knew that ever was done.
I watched those guys. Wow, I didn't know that.
The Youngblood jerseys at one point had the name, like the first name and the last name. So it had like the first name in little letters and the last name in big letters.
On top of the last name, right?
Like a smaller font above it, above the big last name nameplate. That's how I remember that. I did not ever notice this about the Pruitts on the Browns, and I watched them plenty when I was a kid.
Also cool. Very good. Well, Aaron, where are we at on the calendar? Where are you at on the calendar here, getting ready for all your data research to come out? And just where are we at here on July 2nd for you?
Please don't say completely detached.
No. Finishing the FTN Football Almanac, our big preseason book, the FTN Football Almanac, comes out July 14th. And you can pre-order it by going to ftnfantasy.com/almanac. It will be in print, as well as PDF, as in past years. And I have one last projection simulation to do, incorporating the Miami-Pittsburgh trade. But for the most part, I know sort of where we're projecting teams, and most of the chapters are written, and we're copy editing and looking for where there's, you know, two periods in a row and stuff like that.
And you're also coming back with your podcast with Mike Tenier, who we talk to as well once in a while?
Yes, our podcast starts again next Thursday, July 10th. We'll do every Thursday at 11 a.m. Eastern. If you search on YouTube for Schatz and Tenier NFL podcast, we're going to do division previews. I'm also, Bills fans will be interested to know, I'm going to be doing Mina Kimes's podcast in a couple of weeks, and I'm the AFC East guy. So I'm doing the AFC East preview with her. So there'll be plenty of Bills talk.
Good. How big a favorite do you think the Bills deserve to be?
In the division?
Yes.
I mean, big. I mean, the team you think of as second is Miami. And they look like they're going into a rebuilding. I mean, they didn't trade for nothing. They got Minka Fitzpatrick. But there's so many issues with that team, like, you know, who's going to play cornerback and can Tagovailoa stay healthy and can their offensive line improve? And it just doesn't look like they're really going to be a serious competitor. Like, if you said to me Josh Allen gets hurt and somebody else wins the AFC East, I think it's more likely that the Patriots rise up because I think that they have a wider range of possibilities. Like, their worst season would be worse and their best season would be better than what Miami has in store.
I agree with you about Miami. I just think it's hard to really even figure out exactly what they're doing other than backing up. But they seem to refuse to say that, but I guess that's not that uncommon. Where do you think it went wrong there for them, if indeed they are sort of this window for now is closing?
Well, the first thing is that the offense doesn't seem to work with any quarterback other than Tua. And I don't know whether that is that he is particularly good at distributing the ball or that the offense is so complicated, McDaniel's offense is so complicated that it takes so much to learn that he can't adapt it for backups. You look at, like, Green Bay, and they had to use Malik Willis a couple of times last year, and they won. Malik Willis played well, and they won. That's quite a coaching job by Matt LaFleur, and McDaniel hasn't been able to do anything similar when Tagovailoa has been out. And then just defensive decline and injuries, right? Like, you know, Ramsey got older and Bradley Chubb got hurt. Jalen Phillips got hurt. And certain guys didn't develop and the defenses haven't been impressive.
So this trade with the Steelers, you know, I'm thinking about from a fantasy standpoint and wondering just what it means for Jonnu Smith, and you're maybe not looking at it that way, but does it make sense for the Steelers to want to make this move? Do you like it for them?
I just updated our tight end, you know, section with new projections from Jeff Radcliffe, who's the award-winning projections guy from FTN. And he actually had Smith's projection not that much lower than what it was with Miami. I mean, he has both Smith and Freiermuth not doing as much as they did last year, but he thinks that Smith will still be a reasonably big part of the Pittsburgh offense. I think Smith is an interesting addition. They weren't sure what they were going to do for a third receiver, Roman Wilson, Calvin Austin. Now they're going to probably use a lot of two tight end personnel with Freiermuth and Smith, and Freiermuth's more of a blocker, obviously. Smith's more of a move guy, and I think that's interesting. The question is how they're going to use Ramsey, right? Because Minka Fitzpatrick was like, he was the deep free safety, and that's what he was, and that's what he played. And that's not really how you want to use Jalen Ramsey. You want to move him around and do different things with him. But they had a good slot corner last year named Beanie Bishop, and they don't necessarily have someone to play free safety without Minka Fitzpatrick there. So what are they doing with their secondary? That's the question.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yesterday on our fantasy podcast, by the way, ADP chasing, Davis Maddock hit us with, how many snaps do you think Darnell Washington played last year for Pittsburgh? And I was just thinking to myself, like, I don't know, 100? And it was 584. So, I mean, he played 52% of the snaps. Are we going to see something called 13 personnel from the Steelers? Because who even is their wide receiver two anyway?
I love 13 personnel, by the way, because have you ever played Madden? The Patriots playbook used to have 13 personnel, and they had this amazing play action out of 13 personnel where your tight ends, you know, if you had Gronk or whatever, and then your one wide receiver would go deep and It was a great play. Big 13 personnel fan.
Who would that tight end three have been on New England in the Gronk Hernandez years? Who are we looking at?
Day, I don't know, Matt LeClerc or something. I don't know.
Oh, yes.
A guy named Matt LeSomething. I don't even remember what his last name was.
If you don't mind, like, is this a trend? Not 13 necessarily, but 12. And that's applicable with the Bills, with what they've did. I mean, you've got a lot of tight ends, including Kincaid here, who's only sort of they're an F, right? They're a quasi tight end. So are we going to see even more of that around the league, you think?
Hey, listen, statistically, right? Passing is better out of 12. And running is better out of 11. You know, do what they don't expect you to do. You put the two tight ends on the field. You try to get the other team to put its base defense. If you have good pass-catching tight ends, they have goals, they're going up against linebackers, they're going to win, right? So I absolutely think we're moving in that direction, although some of these guys, like, you know, Mike Gesicki, you know, you might have been thought of as receivers in the past rather than tight end. You know, Gesicki doesn't block very much.
Right. I want to get back to the Steelers here in a second, but seeing as we got to this 13 personnel point, what about the? Do you think the Bills will be copied at all with the frequency with which they use the sixth offensive lineman? I know everybody does a little of it, goal line and different stuff, but the Bills did it, you know, wherever they were on the field, and I don't want to overstate it, but they led the league in it, and I just wonder, and it was very effective for them, and they even passed out of it on occasion, which was effective too. Thinking of the Jacksonville primetime game, I think they scored a touchdown out of that formation with only one or two receivers even on the field. Do you think that's a copycatable thing?
No, because they use six linemen about as much as the most common team usually does. So it's not like a ridiculous amount. And my guess is that other teams, when they look at the Bills offense, they don't say the thing that's winning for them is the sixth lineman. They say the thing that's winning for them is the quarterback.
Right.
If we're going to try to copy anything, you know, let's talk about how Jackson Dart might turn into Josh Allen, you know, that kind of thing.
Right. So you mentioned you're tweaking chapters here because of the Steelers-Dolphins trade, or just going over it and fine-tuning it. What do you make of the Steelers? Like, are they because they look like a team that thinks that they're a Super Bowl contender now, to me, after getting Rodgers and now this trade. And are they delusional, or is that boat going to, you know, float?
I mean, we have them declining a little bit, although I'm going to guess that it'll be a little bit less after I plug in this trade. We have their defense coming back to the pack a little bit. But, you know, Tomlin keeps defying the laws of physics. You know, I mean, he's a great locker room manager, right? He's great at the elements of coaching that you can't measure. And it feels like he gets 9-8 out of these guys in a wild card every year. And I'm sure they're going to be in the wild card hunt. But do I think they're a Super Bowl contender with Aaron Rodgers at quarterback, given how Aaron Rodgers played last year? God, no.
Aaron Schatz, our guest, FTN Fantasy, Mike Schoep and the Bulldog here. So back to the Bills. It continues to be a talking point whether or not they have enough speed and skill position talent. And you may be aware of how right after the draft, their GM jumped on our station and lashed back at any criticism of that. And in an article with Tyler Dunn, he went as far as to say, basically in so many words, Aaron, how can people say we have an edited wide receiver? I signed Josh Palmer. So
he did.
And then it was Elijah Moore as well after that. Did last year basically call game on this subject and like the Bills shouldn't worry about it? Or is it still worth debating?
There's a difference between this is their weakness and they're not trying to fill it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, they traded for Cooper, right? Like they're absolutely trying to fill it. They are trying to solve this problem. But it still is, it's not like a big problem, but you look at their roster and you're like, what's the biggest problem? That's what comes out as the biggest problem. It's not like it's like, you know, mm-hmm. If you look at the roster of the Carolina Panthers and you ask what's the biggest problem, you get a much larger problem, but everybody's got some weakness. This just happens to be the most obvious Bills weakness, even if it's not that weak.
So what is the sum total of it then? Like last year, the same points were made and they averaged 30 points a game and ran for 30 touchdowns, by the way, on the ground.
Yeah.
So is it likely more of the same?
I think the feeling is when you get into the playoffs that Allen doesn't have that guy who's like the guy where you're like, oh my God, it's 3rd and 7. We've got to get it to this guy. We know that Jamar Chase can get that ball. Kind of thing, that they don't have that guy. But by the way, Baltimore also doesn't have that guy. And given Ayuk's health, I don't know if San Francisco has that guy. You know, I mean, Washington does, and Philly does, but not every team has that guy. So like I said, it's a weakness because here's the thing. The answer to the GM complaining that people are pointing this out as a weakness is to say, okay, what do you think your weakness is? Because the answer is not, we are a perfect team with no weaknesses.
It has to be something.
Right. There has to be something that is not as strong as everything else, and this just happens to be the thing.
Right. You know what's even a tougher question maybe to ask a football person is what's your least important thing? Because everything is always important, right? If you ask Sean McDermott about, you know, punt return gunners or something, you're like, oh, it's very important. We have that. But
long snappers.
Name. I mean, what would be at the bottom? That's what I would love to know from these guys in a private moment. What comes in at the bottom? Well, in terms of the AFC East, there is a lot of Patriots buzz. And I wonder how you're hearing it. I mean, you've been around them for a long time. Do you think that it's justified?
I mean, I think people are a little higher on the Vrabel hire than they should be, given that we've never seen Vrabel coach a team other than Tennessee. So we don't know what was Vrabel and what was those players, right? So I think that people are a little too high on the Patriots. But the upside is very clearly there. They added a lot of defensive talent. Drake May is very talented. If Stephon Diggs is healthy, he has the number one receiver. The offensive line should be improved. The offensive coordinator should be improved. The coach actually knows what a coach is supposed to be doing on different days. That's, like, important. So, I mean, the upside is definitely there. I think a 7-10 or something is more likely than them being really in the wild card hunt. But I think the upside is stronger than Miami's, like I said.
Okay.
Do you think May is, like, real tomato ketchup?
Yeah, I do. He's really good. Now, I mean, you know, you've got to make sure that he doesn't develop bad habits because the players around him aren't good enough.
The schedule is interesting, and this is true of the Steelers, and there must be an inverse of these somewhere, but both of those teams have, I think anyway, the schedule gets much tougher later. And the Steelers have had a couple of seasons in the last decade, even last year, where they were what?
Yeah.
What were they last year? 10-1 or something like that? And then lost out. But New England has a schedule where they could come here Sunday night, week 5 at the Bills. 4-0 is not crazy. Raiders, Miami, Steelers, Panthers.
Yeah. Yeah. I haven't looked yet at which teams have those weird first half, second half schedules. But you're right. Pittsburgh, last year we knew going into the season. Like we said going into the season, oh my God, Pittsburgh's schedule is all backloaded. They're going to look really good for the first half of the year. And then that's exactly what happened. And then they played worse in the second half, but they also played much better teams. So you're right. You're absolutely right. It's not ridiculous to think the Patriots could come in at 4-0 if things go right for them. And there'll be a lot of hype. And the Bills will smack them down, and normality will be
order will be restored.
And when do you even stop with New England's schedule? At Buffalo in week 5, then New Orleans, Tennessee, Cleveland. I mean, maybe the three worst teams in the league. I don't know. They could be. Tennessee and Cleveland were that last year. Atlanta, Tampa, yeah. Jets. They could end up having that Steelers season. Where last year, where they could end up, you know, being in such good shape by like Thanksgiving that it's already sort of made for them. I don't know. It'd make for an interesting race.
I have them as the 5th easiest schedule in the league for the whole year, but you're right that it gets harder at the end. They have the Bengals in week 12 and then the Ravens in 16 and the Bills again in 15. I have them with the number 28 schedule, but I have Buffalo with the number 27 schedule, so it's not like their schedule is particularly difficult.
Who's number one, San Fran?
The easiest is San Francisco, and the hardest is the New York Giants.
The Giants thing is almost cruel. Like, what did they do to deserve that?
Right. Well, I mean, because, like, part of it is that teams like San Francisco are going to be much better this year. Mm-hmm. Chicago is going to be better this year than they were last year. So the Giants ended up by being in last place, pulling these teams that are going to be much better than last place teams.
And even maybe the Raiders.
Yeah, the Raiders should be improved, too, with Geno Smith. Yep.
You like them? There's hype there, too.
No, I think they're going to be pretty meh. I think, you know, like not bad, but not either, like 8-9 or 9-8.
What about the Chiefs? We're almost to the end here. Just a minute or two on the defending AFC champs here.
I mean, they look really strong. I think Rashee Rice comes back. Everybody's sort of waiting to hear whether he gets some sort of suspension, right? Legal problems, but they may get there have their receivers. Last year, they didn't have those guys playing together at all. Travis Kelce is clearly over the hill. So that is certainly an issue. But, you know, there's lots of good defensive players there, and they're absolutely in the mix again. But, you know, I think Buffalo and Baltimore are both better than them, and I think it's more likely that Buffalo or Baltimore is the AFC representative.
Well, here's hoping. Thanks for your time, Aaron. Busy month, it seems, with the podcast. Congrats on that and the Almanac, too. And enjoy the rest of your offseason.
Absolutely. FTNFantasy.com/almanac for your pre-orders, right. And I'll come back on the show once we're out.
Very good. Thanks again, Aaron.
Talk to you later.
Aaron Schatz with us, FTN Fantasy.